Carla Woody is a teacher of conscious living, with more than 20 years leading spiritual travel journeys and mentoring people to reimagine their lives and make a vibrant reality. She founded Kenosis in 1999 to serve human potential and guide the vision, One Tribe, One World. In 2007, she founded Kenosis Spirit Keepers as a nonprofit extension, seeking to help preserve indigenous traditions threatened with decimation. Carla is the author of Calling Our Spirits Home and Standing Stark. This is her talk entitled The Fork in the Road, How to Get Off the Beaten Path.
I think we'll go ahead and get started because we've really got just about an hour, and I want to make sure that I get presented what I want to present. And also, there's actually some time for us to have a little bit of discussion and, you know, questions, answers, and that kind of thing. So I know some of you, but there's some of you that I do not know. And again, thanks for coming. I'll give you just a brief background about essentially who I am, and you're going to learn more as we go along. But I've been involved in the field of human potential since the late 80s. And it's been quite a journey for me. I mean, I was leading a very, very mainstream life at one point in time as a logistician for the United States government, if you can believe that. And then did some OD consulting, organizational development, and so forth. And then I got on a very different track. I became introduced to neuro-linguistic programming, NLP. And I'll be talking a little bit more about that later. And that kind of opened my eyes to a lot of things and really started me on this pathway. And what really furthered me on the pathway was experiential study in world spiritual traditions. So I did a whole lot of traveling and a lot of exposure to different traditions. And finally, what I really came back to, because it seemed to ground me in a way that nothing else really did, was more about Native spirituality. So the work that I'm doing now is really an integration of neuro-linguistic programming, a lot of other healing modalities, subtle energy work, and what I've learned through the world spiritual traditions, and particularly, as I said, Native spirituality. Now, what I want to do to kind of kick this off is tell you a story. And I'm going to tell you in kind of a level of detail, because there's a process to this that I'd like for you to pick up on. And that as I tell this story, I'd like for you to also think about your own life and where maybe something similar has happened for you. This was back in 1994. And I was living in the inner city in Dayton, Ohio, and as I said, leading a fairly mainstream life, but I had kind of put my toe in the waters that I'm in now. And one day I saw an ad in an NLP professional journal, and that ad was for this program that was going to take place several months from that time. And it was going to take place in the southern Utah desert in the San Rafael Swell. And it was entitled Modeling the Shaman. And I took one look at that, and there was something about it. It's like I had this charge that said, I've got to do this. Now, first of all, there are a couple of significant things about this that I want you to pay attention to. I didn't know what a shaman was. As I said, I was living in Dayton, Ohio. And we didn't have a lot of influences that way. And the other thing is that this was a camping experience. I'd never been camping in my entire life. You know, so this was huge. And but nevertheless, there was something about this experience that as I looked at that, you know, just the bare bones advertising that said, I have to do this. So I immediately picked up the phone and I called. And the woman who was the marketing person, she said, you know, I'm really sorry, but that's full. And I said, you've got to be kidding. You know, I mean, here we are, this is March when I'm calling. And it was for an experience that was taking place Labor Day weekend, you know, so September, and the thing's already full. And I was so adamant that I just had to do this. I kept her on the phone for an hour. And finally she said, all right. She says, I'll put you on a waiting list, but there are a lot of other people on that waiting list too. And I said, well, okay, go ahead, you know, put me on the waiting list. And she did. And back then, as I said, I was doing organizational development, so I had contracts that I had to fulfill. And normally my calendar was pretty full. 3 weeks prior to that event, I got a phone call from one of the sponsors, and he said, if you want to come, we've got a place for you. And I looked at my calendar, and just that week was open. Very interesting, right? So we get up to that point, and I fly cross country and land in Salt Lake City, and this woman who was also one of the sponsors, she was picking up a few people, myself, and then also some people from Mexico that were coming in for this. And we drove down south, you know, and she, I don't remember what car she, kind of car she had, but it was just in a regular car, you know. And we drove so far into the desert, San Rafael Swell, until we couldn't drive any farther in that car. And then here came a guy in his pickup truck, and we're gonna get on that pickup truck and we're gonna go deeper in. Well, here's something else. I've never been in a pickup truck before. Yeah. So these are a lot of new things going on. And also what was happening is, as you can imagine, if you've ever had anything at all similar to this, you get involved in something new like that, and all of a sudden fear kicks in, right? I mean, it may have seemed really, really exciting initially, but as we're driving further south and then deeper into the desert and that kind of thing, and I'm thinking, what in the world have I gotten myself into? You know, so we roll into camp, and there are already some other people there, and I get off, and I'm looking around, and you have to understand that back then I was really shy. There is no way that I would be in a situation where I didn't know a lot of people, unless it was a professional situation, or that I would be, you know, the focus of attention or anything like that. So I'm nervous about that as well, because there's hardly anybody I know. I get down and I'm just kind of milling around with everybody else. And all of a sudden I see this man who's making a beeline to me. And he's got on this long poncho and he's got this long wavy hair and he's got this beautiful smile. And he walks right up to me and he puts his arms around me and all my fear dissipates. And that was my introduction to Dona Miracle Yavar. He is the person that they called a shaman, but he's really a mystic. And that was the beginning, really, of this journey that I'm going to talk to you about. The next day, then, let me back up, because this is interesting in and of itself, too. Back then, I didn't speak any Spanish. Well, he didn't speak any English. And that's why, you know, one of the people that we're picking up from Mexico was going to be the translator. So he would say things in Spanish, it would be translated to English and so forth. The thing that was interesting about that was that before it was even translated, I knew what he said. Very interesting. So the next day or two, we were sitting around in a natural rock amphitheater, and he had been talking for a period of time, and through the translation and so forth, all of a sudden, he looked right at me, and he pointed, and he motioned for me to come up. As I said, you know, I mean, normally I would just have died a thousand deaths to have done something like that, but somehow or another it felt perfectly safe. And what I did is I came up, and he stood about this far from me, and his eyes locked in onto mine. And I never felt so much love in my entire life. And what he said to me was, the way to see is with the body's eye. And he reached into my heart chakra, my energy field, and he opened my energy field at my heart. And he said, and not the mind's eye, and he shut off my mind. And I felt all of this, and it must have been evident from all of the people that were sitting around that started booing and awing and murmuring and all of this. And for me, it was like these reverberations, these waves that were happening in such a way that I had never experienced before. And then within a few days, I had to go home. And you can imagine what that's like, because that's called reentry. And you have an experience like that, it shifts you at such a deep level. And then you go back in to your everyday life. And what do you do? Right? What do you do? So there's something I want to, a few things I want to present to you as frameworks and realities, really. And one of them is that the past is the present, is the future. It's all the same. It's all the same until it isn't. Now, probably most of you here understand that, you know, we're born into this world and then we have these experiences in life. And we have our responses to these experiences. They become part of who we are and our mindset, the filters through which we view the world, through which we experience things. We're conditioned along the way. Okay? So we begin to pay attention to certain things and not others. And we carry this along with us all the way from the past, every step of the way, that is also the present, into this time. And we carry it on into the future, you know? Now, you know, maybe it's an evolution, of course, you know? I mean, we learn along the way and that kind of thing, but essentially, we bring all of this kind of thing with us until we don't, until we... There are some things that we want to hang on to, of course, because they really serve us well, and then there are other things that, you know, they just don't serve us anymore. And we want to move beyond that. And yet, if we haven't come to a place when something has been offered, then all we do is continue to perpetuate what we've already done, right? I mean, we all know this, and to various degrees. So, past is the present, is the future. Years ago, this was back in the 80s, you remember Far Side, the cartoon Far Side? I used to love Far Side. And there was one in particular that I really liked a lot. I loved it so much, I cut it out, and I put it up on my desk where I would see it all the time. And I think you'll understand why when I describe it. So here's the setup on the thing, is that there's this path, and there's like this herd of people going down this path. And then there's another path. And there are a couple of lonely souls on this path. And right here at the fork in the road, there's a sign. And this way, with the herd of people, it says the beaten path. And on this one, it says off. I kept that in front of me because I didn't want to be one of the herd. You know, I don't think any of us do, or it completely. I mean, depends on what your comfort level is, you know, but we all want to be special. We all want to be different somehow than the herd. We all want to get off that beaten path in certain ways. And this is what I'm going to offer to you, is that indeed there are times that come along, I'd like for you to think about this in your own life, when such a thing has happened as I described. What happened for me all those years ago in 1994, which was just one of those times, but it was a very, very significant one, okay? When there was something, you know, I was plodding along this path, and there was something that brought me to a degree of readiness, right? something brought me to a degree of readiness, either something within my absolute whole being, or there was some part of me that could project ahead and see that I didn't want more of that. Or at least I didn't want all of that. You know what I'm saying? Okay? And so here's what happens. There's a process, I believe, that happens. And the first one is that you bring yourself to a place of readiness. And the next thing that happens is that there's an invitation. However that comes, and we'll talk more about that in a minute. But the next step really is about acceptance, right? Are you going to accept that invitation or not? And you see, that's really what the fork in the road is. You got the invitation. Are you going to make the choice to step off? Or are you going to continue on down this beaten path? And if you have made that step, that choice to step off, then there's the transition to do that truly. You know, and it doesn't just happen like that. I mean, it happens at varying levels and over time, and you go deeper and deeper, and you're continually tested, right? So what I'd like for us to do here is tell me, from the story that I told you, that whole process, remember I told you I'd tell you in some level of detail? Right? What was the invitation? Because I want you to think about in your own life about how the invitation comes. What was the invitation, if you recall my story?
When the opportunity arose that there was space for
you. Actually, it was before that.
Yeah. When you saw it in the paper.
Exactly. When I saw that invitation, right, the announcement, it was an announcement. It's an announcement from the universe, you know, kind of deal. That invitation, and there was something within me that resonated. It resonated to such a degree. See, that was my choice point right there. That was the choice. Now, I mean, we've all had these kind of things, right? Where you see something, maybe somebody hands you a book or whatever it is, and you pick up the book and read it, or you don't. Or you see an announcement, like maybe you saw the announcement for this talk, I don't know, you know, and you're here, right? You're here. So that is an acceptance of the invitation. Okay? And you'll be tested. You will absolutely be tested along the way. You know? And we'll talk about that in a little bit. Before we go in that direction, because you kind of got some basics here, right, about what I'm talking about in this framework, I want to offer you something else. And this is another framework. This comes from the people of the Andes. The Quechua Indians in the Andes, and they have a model of the world, the way that they experience the world. It's not just a thought process, because frankly, you know, it's really different in those kind of spaces, you know, and so it's not even a thought process, it's how they really experience the world. So in their model of the world, there's the left side, and there's the right side. Now, the left side of the world, and by the way, it has nothing to do with the left and right side of the brain or anything like that, because that's what we with our thinking minds want to put it into some kind of category, right? And some kind of framework that way, but it doesn't have anything to do with that. Left side has to do with the mystery. It has to do with the infinite. It has to do with what they call salka, which is a Quechua word which means undomesticated energy. It's where chaos is. It's where those, if you've ever heard anything about the morphogenetic fields of possibility and probability, those random events out there that you can reach out and pick this one and pick this one, allow your your being to pull those in. Left side. This is where creation is. It's in all that chaos that you can reach into and just draw to you. It's nonverbal. And on the right side, then, has to do with, as an example, everyday reality. We'd like it if that was everyday reality, right? Or not, depends on what you're, how you want to think about that. Okay, so right side, that has to do with chair you're sitting on, everything you see in this room, me up here talking to you in this way, anything of the mind, any analytical structures, any thoughts, any beliefs that you may have about yourself, other people, the world in general, all of those kind of things, any hierarchies, any technique. Now, here's the thing that's kind of interesting is that if you use a technique, say in meditation, people think that that's the left side, but it's not, because it's a technique. Do you see? Any ritual, that's on the right side. You know, it's any kind of construct. That's what I want you to understand. Any kind of construct. Anything that has to be laid out this way, this way, this way, this way. However, what it is anything like that, like ritual, meditation techniques, and so forth, those are actually portals that you open to this left side. So truly, as an example, what I said was that with Don Americo Yabar, they build him as a shaman, and I said he's really a mystic. Because mostly in shamans work with plants, ritual, that kind of thing. Okay, so that's really right-sided. If mysticism is over here, because all that is just energy. You know, it's a transmission of energy. That's all it is. Now, what I want you to understand is that true change will happen over here in the left side. It will not happen over here initially, okay? If it's really going to happen, it won't happen in the right side. Or if it does, it happens over a long period of time. Okay? So as an example, this is where traditional psychotherapy is. It happens at the behavioral level, usually, that kind of thing. Yourself to think differently. In the left side, what will happen is, if any of you have been in prayer and felt something move inside, if you've been in very, very deep meditation and there's all of a sudden, it's like you've lost your body and something's happening, or you've had visions, or it feels as though you're having transmissions or certain kind of things. Something's happening at a certain level where you don't have any words for it, except you know that something's different. Something is different for you at the very, very deep level. And so it happens here, and then it's inserted over here to the right side into everyday life. That's how those really profound shifts of consciousness and your shifts in your life actually happen. Now the trick is that how do you make those changes? You know, it's like, because we're so used to hanging on to a certain reality, right? You know? And so, you know, the whole transition piece has to do with how invested are we in preserving, remember this reality that says the past is the present is the future, how invested are we in preserving this reality that we think we're living? And, you know, herein lies the answer as far as what kind of times and experiences that people may have in order to receive the invitation. So I'm going to talk about that for a few minutes, and then I'd like to open it up to some little bit of discussion. If you come to a place of readiness and you are absolutely ready in your entire being, and your entire being is calling out for some kind of shift, then it can be such a glorious thing. It's almost like you want to giggle all the time because there are these synchronicities that are coming into you. You know, these things that are like coincidences, but they're not really coincidences. It's things, you know, because you are carrying that energy that is saying, it's like that invitation that goes out, that you then become an attractor for those things that are going to open the way. And so maybe somebody does put that book into your hand. Somebody does, in meditation one day or after meditation one day, then, you know, a thought comes winging in like that, and all of a sudden it's like, you know, it's like you've got your whole life's purpose or something. You know, you ever have that kind of feeling that's all of a sudden you've got your own, you've got a grounding that you didn't ever have before. You may not be able to articulate it or anything like that, but you've got that level of grounding in that way, you know? So those kind of things will happen. It seems as though you're in this flow of life, so that, you know, here you are at the fork of the road, and you're receiving one invitation after another. Okay. So that's one way it happens. And then there's another way. If you're so invested in preserving that reality that you have been living, then, you know, sometimes I work with folks like that it's, you know, they're really torn. And you've heard people say that kind of thing, right? It's like, I'm just torn. You know? So there's a lot of internal conflict in that way. There's a part of them that wants to step off, but there's another part that just wants to continue on down that beaten path. Okay? And it's as though, you know, that part that wants to continue on down this beaten path, it's like if you got your hands on a steering wheel. And no, I mean, it's like fear is huge at that point. And so somebody's got, they're gripping the steering wheel. And for me, I get this visual sometimes. It's like if I can pry that person's fingers off of the steering wheel, as soon as I do, they're right down again, you know? And it's because that fear is just so huge. And when there's not a letting go in that way, then what will tend to happen is some kind of crisis. Okay? Because remember, there is a part of you that wants to evolve. There really is. There's a part that wants to evolve. There may be one that is just hanging on for dear life. And so what happens? Insert a crisis, whatever that is. So it can be a health issue. It can be the loss of a loved one. It can be loss of a job. It can be, you know, I mean, look at what's going on now in the world, you know, the economy, what it is. People have a choice about how they're going to experience that and if they're going to buy into it or not. You know, my feeling is that we globally are at this fork in the road, you know. I don't know how you feel about the president that was just elected in, but there's an invitation. And the pendulum is going to start to swing. And when the pendulum swings, I want to entrain to it. I don't know about you, you know? So let me, again, talk a little bit about entrainment and that kind of thing, because these programs that I do that are like the spiritual travel programs and retreats and that kind of thing, even the Navigating Your Life Path program, and I'll talk to you a little bit about that, but there's something that happens, and for those of you, because there are a few of you in here that have traveled with me before, in various ways. And so this will be maybe a little bit of a familiar speech to you. For those of you that have not, it probably won't be. But what I always say to people is, if you're engaged at this level, if you're here with me today, then you have self-selected for this journey. There is something that has brought you to that point where you have chosen essentially to step off, right, the beaten path. So you have self-selected for this journey. And especially when we're in places like Peru or with the Maya down in Mexico and Chiapas and a lot of those other places, or even, you know, I do a program in France and Provence and the Mary Magdalene sites and so forth. Magic that begins to happen. But it's not, because it's not a new age kind of magic, okay? It's not that titillation that people get so wound up about. This is real, you know, in the sense that if people come together, my intent in these programs and people coming together is extremely strong. You get whatever it was you came for, your intent. Even if you don't know what your intent is, and by the way, you can't put that into words either, because it's a resonance inside of you. It's whatever brought you, whatever drew you, okay, is that intent. My intent is so strong that, and if I'm working with someone like Don Americo, who certainly holds that as well, is that as you self-select for these journeys, then you entrain to that. You entrain to that intent. And what happens is there's a very powerful presence that comes about, and it's like a cocoon that we work with and travel in and that kind of thing. And I tell people that, you know, there are a lot of different levels to what's happening here. Some of them you may see, and others of them, they're not visible to your ordinary eyes. You won't hear them. They're going on all at the same time. It's the left side. Okay, that's what it is. It's the left side. Now, all the time that we may be in the right side, doing right-sided things like eating together, maybe hiking, even traveling on a bus, there are things going on at all different levels from the left side that get inserted, okay? And that's where the shift happens. So I'll give you just some examples. So if people come down with whatever intent that they came down with, mostly what happens is that people in our culture have never been able to slow down enough that they can really feel still and grounded in that stillness, that they can open to it completely. And I will say that 99.9% of the people that self-select for these journeys have that experience. And if you have that experience, you are different. You're different than you were before you came along, you know? It's no longer, you've shifted the present, you see. You've begun to step off that beaten path. Now, you still have to go home and figure out how you're going to integrate all of that, right? Talk about that in a second. Here's another thing that can happen, because in these programs, because of the way that we're together, the bonding that goes on, and just the energy, it's the force that gets behind it, it's not unusual for us to have emotional healings all the time for people. We've had some physical healings as well, which is some pretty interesting stuff, and I want to tell you about one of those.
Could you speak just a little bit louder, please?
Sure.
Appreciate it.
Okay, I'll come closer. How's that?
Okay.
Yeah. So here's a story about a physical healing that happened, and again, remember what I said about things going on at different levels, and one of the things that I really ask people to do is to begin to think about things metaphorically as well when they're in these programs, because that takes you out, that takes you out of that right side immediately, and it begins to put you over here into the left side, you know? Okay. So here was a situation with a woman. This happened about 5 years ago, I guess. And she was from Colorado, and she was really wanting to come on this trip, and she called up and talked to me about it, and it was down to Peru. She called up and talked to me about it, and you know, and she signed up for it, and then immediately, and unbeknownst to me, but this is usual that happens, is the fear kicked in afterwards, kicked in big time, you know. But I'm so glad that she decided to come anyway, even though, you know, she decided to step off that path anyway. This particular trip, we were going down into the jungle, which is the same program that we're going to be doing this year. The first half of the trip is always, one of the things that we do is we go to Don Americo's ancestral home, which is called Salcahuasi, the house of undomesticated energy. So you can imagine what happens there, right? So we had been there, and there's a very old Paco. Paco is like a shaman or a brujo that lives there at Salcahuasi and kind of caretakes the place. His name is Don Miguelito. He's probably in his 90s. And one of the things that he does is he does divination with coca leaves. And when we go there, I ask him to always do a divination for the group, you know, so that to kind of kick off our journey and so forth. And he did that. And he said a few things about, you know, different things. And he doesn't point out anyone in particular, by the way. He never does this. But one of the things that he said was that there is someone here who will be healed of a chronic illness. Well, and that could mean a lot of things, right? Okay. And different people in there, they kind of took that, it must be me, and, you know, and so forth. I learned about all this after the fact. I didn't learn about it when it was actually going on. She really took that to heart. And so we left Salcahuasi, and we began to descend through the cloud forest and all the way down into the jungle. We got into a boat finally and went up the headwaters of the Amazon. You know, it sounds very romantic, and it is, you know. And we came to this the lodge that we were staying, which was there in Manu. Manu is it's a huge preserve, beautiful, beautiful place, very pristine. And in this lodge, and it's in the middle of nowhere, the next day, we're getting ready to do this jungle walk, okay? Well, what I didn't know, and I found out later, is this is a woman who was in her early 60s. She had very severe asthma, and I didn't know it. And that was part of her fear that she was battling about whether or not she was going to come, and she overcame that fear. Here we're getting ready to do this jungle walk, going into the jungle where there, of course, it's all kind of mold and, you know, these kind of things that would kick an asthma attack. And so we're getting ready to go in, and she goes into fear again. She didn't have her inhaler with her, although it was in her room. But she didn't go back and get it. And what she did instead is she went into the jungle with the rest of us. And what she said was that she could feel the jungle absorbing her fear. And it healed her asthma. And she had this asthma since she was a child. And here we are. I kept up with her for about 4 years. I haven't talked to her in about a year. And she was free of that. So that's an example of the kind of thing that can happen when you enter the left side. And you may not even know that you're in the left side, except that you kind of set it up as far as, you know, the environment that you're in, you see. Now, as I said, you have to go home after all of this. You're different somehow. What do you do with that? Here's what I want to tell you is that there is always a conflict between what was and what will be. It is natural for you to experience resistance. Think about it like this. As soon as your mind begins to create something new off the beaten path, right? It's a natural thing that you experience resistance to it. It's like you're bumping up against this membrane. It's like a rebirthing, really, if you think about it. And if you're going through any kind of significant change, then it can be really tough. And you're bumping up against that membrane over and over and over until finally you break free. So one of the things that I did, because, you know, I mean, being on the path that I had chosen to be on, off, you know, and it's first for myself. And then, you know, I work with individuals and groups and that kind of thing. And as I began to do more of that, I began to not only notice my own process, but the kind of things that they themselves were going through. And what were the interventions that can happen along the way? What are the things that you need to pay attention to so that you can actually create some kind of new pathway for yourself that's different from the old one? And you've got the tools that are necessary so that you don't fall back. Or if you do, because by the way, this is natural, you can fall back, but you know you've done it, right? You know it. And it's so uncomfortable, you can't stay there. And you do whatever you need to do to get off. Right? The Navigating Your Life Path program is the program that I created in order to help that transition in the right-sided world that we all live in. You know, it would be great to be on a mountaintop somewhere and just, you know, like some of these shepherds that, you know, are down in Peru and places like that, and just be there and sit on the ground and soak up that energy, and that's my life, and, you know, I'm just, there is no time, it's timeless. But that's not the world we live in. And I can tell you, that's not my work. My work is really is integrating the left side with the right side in such a way that it elevates us all. So when we're talking about that entrainment process and the pendulum swinging the other way, I think it's time for us all just to kind of jump on, you know? I mean, we really are at the choice here, the choice point as to, are we going to continue in the way that we've been? I mean, we're in crisis now globally, pretty much. You know, it happens at the macro level and the micro level. Okay, it happens globally, it happens at a very personal level, that we have a choice point. The more of us that swing with that pendulum, the more power there's going to be, because that's the entrainment process. So, I want to open it up for questions and discussion and that kind of thing. Yes.
So what do you do when you come back home and you get incredibly depressed? How do you integrate this into regular life for the next time?
That's a big question. But you know, I think it's like with the Life Path program, one of the very first things that I do with people is get them to look at what do they really value in different aspects of their life. You know, what are the, and I'm not talking about material things, I'm talking about what are the qualities that they really want in their life, in you know, like in their life work, in what I call their beloved, whatever beloved is, you know, in themselves, in their place, with their people, you know, their community, whatever. And begin to really do some self-examination and some exploration, because here's what happens. People don't do that. You know, mostly, what do? We fall into relationships, we fall into we fall into a job, oh, that looks good, so I'll just take that one, you know, but we don't really think about it. And then before we know, that's how it happens that, you know, the past is the present, it's the future, it's just this continuum that, you know. So the very first step, really, is about doing some self-examination so that you have a foundation to work from.
So you make the right side better.
Yes, absolutely. And at the same time, you know, it's, you got to keep going here into the left side because this is what really strengthens you. Because the resistance that I talked about, the resistance that you're going to experience when you want to make a real change in your life, not only does it come from yourself internally, about the beliefs that you may have, about who you think you are in the world, or what you think is possible, or how safe you feel, those kind of things, you know. So that's the internal resistance that's going on, you know. But you also have the resistance that's around you, from family, friends who are used to you being a certain way, and all of a sudden you're not, and they don't understand it, you know. So it's, I'll tell you, how this work that I'm doing now came to me because I was in the place you're talking about. Absolute chaos in my life after I went home from that experience with Don Americo, Yabar, when he opened up my heart and shut off my mind. And I, all of a sudden, I was very, very much aware of a whole lot of things at different levels. And in the right-sided way, I was aware that there were things, that ways that I was living that weren't okay for me. You know, that I was selling myself out, essentially. This is not an easy path. If you make the choice to get off, you know, it takes courage, I can tell you that. It really does. And I really admire and support anybody who makes that choice. And you need support to do it. You need a like-minded community, like-hearted community, and you need somebody to help you along the way that at least knows some ways of getting through that.
Somewhat off topic, immediate topic of what your presentation is, but probably related to the general topic of paganism. Mm-hmm. And around the same time you're talking about, you went through the transformation. I was living out in California, in the Bay Area, about 87, 93, and paganism, neo-paganism was growing, mm-hmm. a very strong force at that time. A lot of people were engaged in that, a big community there. And one thing I've noticed, I don't know that knowledgeable about it, but wherever you're talking about, whether it's Native American paganism or earth religion and such, and European or Asian, which kind of predates all of the Buddhism and all the monotheisms of the world, they all are very similar,
right,
seems like.
Right, yes.
They're late god, different multiple gods usually in most cases, to nature, the sun and such, different aspects of nature. And is that something, a big part of what your program is, and is that, do you know why that is in general, and based on your knowledge and your study?
Well, first of all, let me say that program, so to speak, is not necessarily about different gods and all that kind of thing. To me, it's what, when I said through Native spirituality, what I have always gotten is grounding. You know, I mean, that's really it. It's about experiencing the earth and the sky in certain ways, the sun, the cycles, the rhythms of nature, and that's what the people that you're talking about, that's what they live by. And in our culture, in Western culture, you know, we've forgotten about all of that. We've forgotten about all of that. You know, we're so entrenched in our technology and all the, you know, all the different things, new things that are coming along. It's as though we're bereft of real grounding. And, you know, that I think that is the angst that people are feeling, in my experience. So I don't know if I've answered your question or not. It has, for me, it has nothing to do with the gods. Yeah, that I have experiences with different, I have experiences with the Maya, the experiences with the Quero people and the Quechua people down in Peru, and some like with the Hopi and so forth. And for me, it all has to just do with respect for the environment, the grounding in the environment, respect for all beings. Other questions?
Question.
Or, yeah.
When you talk about a global choice point, and we're at a global choice point, say, just to help me understand a little bit more, if you go back in time, what would be another global choice point or a world make decision?
Don't ask me those questions. Because I'm not a historian, and I'm not a politician. But I mean, they've been there all along, you know. I mean, if you look at the stock market stuff, so back in the 20s or that kind of thing, you know, cycles.
You're talking about emotional choice, like choosing fear over hope?
You've got it.
Okay.
You've got it. Yeah. People have been, and not everybody, this is a general term, people have been choosing fear for a long time. And that was a campaign that was out there. And now, you know, there's a different campaign that's going on. And it really is about, it's about hope, and it's about, you know, choosing another way of being. Other questions? Yes.
In your work with the many different people you've worked with, what have you found to be some of the common signs that someone's life isn't working for them anymore?
I hate my job. I hate my life. I hate my husband. I can't get along with anybody. My health has gone down the toilet.
All of the above, or any of them.
This could be clues.
And sometimes, I tell you what happened for me way back when. I just felt this kind of low-level angst, you know, that something wasn't right in my world. I was a person who was trying to fit into an environment that didn't fit for me. And because of that, you know, I felt my creativity cut off, and, you know. And early on, I actually had a very severe health issue, a health crisis that happened in my 20s, that in my late 20s, that was kind of like the first iteration, you know, when I made some changes.
Yeah, I mean, we laugh about, like, what you share. That's very obvious, and sadly, there are a lot of people who just go on living thinking that's the way it is, that this is my life, and this is the way it is, and I have some good times, and I have some bad times. I guess I was maybe thinking the more subtle shifts, that you just could feel your life force decreasing and decreasing, and you're going on, and the appearance is, you're looking good, you're feeling good, you're successful, you're doing some good stuff, but inside, it's the tank is headed toward empty.
Well, you know, I had some self-observation skills back then that I finally paid attention to some things, is when I was working for the government and feeling so stymied, you know. I began to notice, first of all, that I was, you know, have always experienced me as being a very calm person and that kind of thing. Here's what I discovered myself doing. I'm walking down the hall and I'm clenching my fists. Just totally unconscious. When I became aware of that, you know, you become aware of, you know, what are the signs that are coming out, even though you're trying to stuff them down, that are actually present, you know. So, others? Question? Yes?
During the navigating your life paths, similar, is there any time spent out in nature, or does it all happen at the hotel?
No, we spent some time in nature, particularly at the end. It's kind of a culmination. Other questions or
Anything you want to share from personal life? And Darlene, did you have something?
I'd like to share. I've been in Carla's program since 2001, and it's been a tremendous value. Her programs are really effective, and especially this Navigating Your Life Path that she has coming up in March and April. If you want to live a deeper, richer life, if you want to overcome some limiting beliefs and realize your true potential, it's a great opportunity to do that, whether it's health, relationships, finance, peace of mind, having a greater sense of connection. One of my favorite stories is when there was this monk who went up to the hot dog stand and he says, "Make me one with everything." And what did he do? He had given the hot dog vendor $20. And he says, "Well, what about my change?" He says, "Well, change comes from within." So what's really cool about these programs is you go inward first and then look at the core values in all those areas and then take those in everyday life, go external from that. My husband and I had a house situation, which is really a pretty terrible thing, and actually my realtor's here and friends of mine are here who knew me when and that kind of thing. We live in a lovely home now, due a lot in part to Carla's work. And tremendous shifts can happen. She had me visualize it, step into it, feel it, sense it, touch it, know it. And, you know, fuzzy slippers by the fireplace, and we live in a beautiful home on a creek and have lovely neighbors, some of which are here as well. So it's just amazing work that she does. So accept the invitation to the Life Path class and accept the invitation to travel to Peru. I know some of you already signed up for that. There's just a few spaces left for that as well. If you have questions on your programs, I invite you to ask any questions.
I want to close with, if you'll bear with me, I just want to read a couple of pages. This is from Standing Stark, which is my most recent book. And I'll come closer. We have heavy rains in Arizona. They normally start in July and go through August. We call the rains monsoons, which may be hard to imagine for those who have not yet experienced the rhythms of the high desert. Sometimes, though, we have a drought year and the rains start later. The tall pines become overthirsty beyond being parched. In those times, all of us develop expectancy. Trees, plants, animals, and humans alike. We're all in it together, after all. But invariably, the monsoons come, often with violent storms. Jagged lightning dazzles the sky. Thunder cracks so loudly, it can bring us up sharply if we're not attuned. In a primal way, we are all more susceptible during periods of scarcity. Wandering in the forest later, we may see the aftermath. In a sea of towering ponderosas or their kin, there are those who stand apart. Not frequently, but infrequently, there will be those who are now shed of their needles, their skins laid open by the snaking of a lightning strike. Standing stark, they appear to be dead. They aren't. When I go and put my forehead against their trunks, I feel the elemental filaments that have startled another kind of consciousness within them. Still dwelling in their habitat, they are even more alive than before. They draw our attention, our fascination. The fire that discharged their coverings often may move to some of the surrounding brush and trees, those in close proximity. Sometimes it may travel from a tree to ignite nearly the entire forest. But before that could happen, it was first necessary for that tree to be burned of its own covering before the fire that began with that one could affect its brethren. The lightning strike oftentimes comes suddenly, a bolt, unexpected. But there may well be a stirring before the charge, and those who have grown tallest are most ready to receive. In order to be ready, we do for ourselves what we know to do as best we can. Yet there must be no striving. The striving of the material world has no place in this transmission. We need only send our willingness up as a prayer and merely stand waiting